Welcome to The Podyssey, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the greatest little independent cinema on the planet, The Odyssey in St Albans. This podcast is a partnership between The Odyssey Cinema and Mix 92.6 FM, Hertfordshire's local radio station. Thanks for joining us. Hello and welcome to the latest edition of The Podyssey. Thank you, by the way, to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of you who have been listening and downloading. We're very grateful that you listen. It makes us slightly nervous that you listen, but thank you. We're very glad that you do. No Sam this time around. He's being lazy and sodded off on holiday because he has no commitment, but never fear. We have Nick here and we have Roberto here. Hello, fellas.
Hello.
How's it going?
Nicely. Without Sam, it falls apart. You see? Got loads coming up for you. We're going to find out about what's been going on with the lads. We're going to look and talk about family films because a lot of them showing over Easter. We've got a new feature coming up, which, I mean, God, hold on to your hats. Whether that's going to work, we will find out. And then we'll find out what's coming up at the Odyssey. So, lads, without further ado, nice to see everybody. What's been going on? What have you been seeing at the Odyssey over the past month or so?
Well, considering around this time now, you know, we're getting into spring, it's sort of the best time to visit the cinema, of course. Get to see these movies that, you know, I'm sort of catching up on. I saw Dogman, which was a really cool animated kids movie. It's based off of like this collection of books. The author is also authored Captain Underpants series.
Oh,
this is like his new series of a dog-human hybrid policeman that saves the day almost every day and then gets his bone at the end. It's a great little kids movie. I will say I'm probably like the oldest dude there as well, just like watching at the back of the room. But I enjoy these, you know, sorts of films, and it was definitely so creative and really like well done. I thought actually in its smallness of it, I don't know Dogman, but it definitely made me like want to see more, to be honest.
Well, my little boy Freddie, he's 5 years old. I'm very familiar with the work of Captain Underpants.
I read Captain Underpants way back.
I never read any of those, actually.
You're missing out.
So I do really want to watch Dogman. I was looking at it, I was like, I could come and watch Dogman on my own on the matinee. I think something got in my way in the end, but I was like, I was debating it.
I also got to see Mickey 17, which is also in itself another bit of a cartoon.
It is,
definitely. It has like full of slapstick, but also just it's like a sci-fi black comedy. You know, the film with Rob Pattinson in it, and double of him is like a great performance. I found it a really fun time. I think we've got that also coming up still. Check it out if you like, you know, movies that are a bit different to your regular scheduled programming.
Yeah, definitely.
Also, credit to Rob Pattinson. I feel like he did Twilight, so of course, lovely, minted for life by the time he's 20 or whatever.
Yeah.
He's really tried to do different film since
then, and used
the fact that he doesn't need the money. And I think credit to him for that.
Yeah, he's probably one of my favourite, like, kind of current working actors, I think. And he always seems to pick really good projects as well. So, yeah. I was just going to say a really funny thing. If you look up Robert Pattinson on the press for, like, all the Twilight films, it's just hilarious because it's just him, like, going, what actually are these films I'm in? Like, he's, like, constantly, like, being a bit cheeky about it. Much to the producer's dismay, I imagine, but it's pretty good content.
Probably just like, I wish I was in Harry Potter longer.
Yeah, you got the short end of the stick there, or the wand.
Any more from Munich that you saw that you liked?
To be honest, I haven't had much time. I've been working at the cinema way too long.
Well, to catch up with as movies. A man who's not been working too hard, I sneaked in to see Bridget Jones at the matinee last week. I saw you in there. Good film, I think. Put it this way, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It was like we were talking about off air. They did the same thing as the Trainspotting sequel, where they're like, we're not going to match how good the things that come before us. So there was kind of no story to it. They just sort of invited you back into the world of Bridget Jones and let you kind of hang out with all the characters one last time with nothing much happening. But I liked it. It was good. Quite a lot.
I got that vibe, though. I didn't get that vibe. You know, it is a little... It's a fun time with, like, the characters that you know again. But, I mean, just coming from me, I've not seen the third or the second. I've seen the first, though, and that is a classic. And this one, for me, like, had depth to it that I enjoyed in some parts. And yes, I did cry as well, to be honest, because there's something hit me about it. I don't know. It had to be her son.
I agree. Yeah. I don't know what was up with me. Like, I've got a theory. I was actually telling you this while you were trying to work in the cinema, Nick, but I cried at a bit that you are sort of, I think, meant to cry at.
Yeah.
But then it's like someone had switched my tap and could turn it off. I then cried about four more times at things that weren't even really that tear-jerking. Yeah, I don't know. It sort of ruined me a bit.
Yeah, it's definitely got a feeling of it.
It touches on some good, like, subjects for a film of that genre, of the rom-com genre. Yeah, no, I think it's quite interesting. I actually looked at one of the writers. They did the film. They did Suffragettes. They did some other films, like pretty serious films. They did the film Shame with Michael Fassbender.
Oh, wow. Oh, that one,
and I was,
yeah,
like, maybe this writer came into the writer's room and they were probably like, what other Bridget hijinks should we get into? And she was probably like, let's explore some really serious stuff, guys. Yeah. And she got away. But I think the film's better for it. I actually watched the first three in preparation for this one. And like you said, it was like kind of just, they got all the characters in. But, you know, I think they should have brought back Patrick Dempsey, because he was like boys with Colin Firth.
Yeah, that's
and he
could
have come in and been like, yo, I'm back.
This is what Roberta's prepared for. Yeah. This speech right here.
He's been, I've got a whole Bridget Jones 4 fanfic, like my version. It would bring in all the lore. I got all the lore stored up here.
It's like the end game of Bridget Jones.
Exactly.
Yeah. The one man calling for the return of Patrick Dempsey. Yeah. No one else noticed.
Honestly, probably am.
Just one more thing, I think, actually, just realizing now, is that a lot of the Bridgets don't have, well, as far as I'm concerned, got a lot of emotional moments. So maybe it's just that. It's bringing in sort of that edge to it that maybe just was a bit more and felt more than that. I wouldn't watch it again, but I did enjoy what I saw.
I agree. And you know what? It's one of those, like, they're getting older, we're getting older. I think there's something in that when you see characters age. You know, Boyhood obviously did it with Richard Linklater in front of your eyes. But there's something about, so Bridget Jones started out life as a kind of, I guess, 20-something, like working in London, dating and all this. Now I've kind of been through a bit in her 50s, I guess, 40s and 50s. So yeah, I thought it was good, very good. And crucially, something else that has happened in the past month or so. Congratulations, Roberto. You are now officially a projectionist.
Yup. Yeah, I'm hanging out with Nick in the very warm projection room where the projectors are very loud. But you know, it's all for a good cause, the independent cinema cause.
How is it?
Yeah, no, it's good. It's definitely, there's definitely a bit of the kind of the idea that the film is going to play and I'm responsible for it. It's like a very, like, that's a bit daunting. But to be fair, it's all like kind of, I think, it's all very, like, intuitive and you kind of, I think, you know, wanting to provide the best cinema experience at the Odyssey kind of comes into play very much and you kind of just work through whatever problem solving, basically, I think, is what I'm kind of getting at the moment from my first few shifts is kind of.
And what films have you projected so far?
I've projected, oh God, I think I forgot the first one. No, I didn't. I projected Better Man, the Robbie Williams monkey film.
Oh, yeah.
Which was great because then sitting in the room, I could just hear all the musical sequences like play very loudly through this thing. So I had just a little soundtrack going while I was doing spreadsheets.
It does help.
Oh, and then I did project Bridget Jones, Mad About the Boy as well.
So can I ask a thick question, which is kind of my job in this podcast, right? Still reels or like...
No.
Does somebody email you the film? Like how are you beaming it out?
That is how kind of how it is. They email us KDMs, as they're called, and then we kind of
they must be massive files.
Films are,
and hundreds gigs.
You kind of you put them on the drives for the projectors. But there is some interesting holdovers, I'd say, from the film days in terms of you know, we have two projectors, and we need to make sure one's like plugged into the right thing, otherwise the sound doesn't come on from the 2K and the 4K.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to load up playlists and stuff and make those ourselves, which I haven't done yet, but I imagine I'll be getting into fairly soon.
To be honest, it's close to being like a computer system overall, besides the actual projector, which is, you know, audio and visual stuff. It's mostly now, we do get a few hard drives every now and again, things like that. Physical media is obviously a bit more pushed out now. So I think they I'm talking about like film reels. That I think that's long. That was the 90s. That's, yeah, like, yeah. Last time.
That's sort of what I imagine it's like up there. You know, like you see it in Inglourious Basterds. You kind of see them in the projection room, and it's literally mm-hmm. I sort of imagine that was what you boys were up to. There.
Yeah.
I mean, I sort of wish it'd make me lose weight a bit more.
Well, look, congratulations, Roberto.
Thank you.
So, in a second, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about family films. A lot of family films showing over Easter, and in the next few weeks, of course, The Odyssey. So we'll be talking about which some of the best family films of all time. Hello and welcome back to part two of the Podyssey. It's currently the Easter holidays. It was still just about with the Easter holidays when this is released, but there's lots of family films coming up at the Odyssey in the coming weeks. There's Penguin Lessons with Steve Coogan. There's the Minecraft film. There is, of course, the new Disney Snow White. Now, let's quickly touch on that before we talk about family film. It's caused a bit of... is controversy the word or just moaning the word? People don't seem to like the idea of the new Snow White.
I think some strange decisions have been made in terms of that that particular film that has, I think, definitely caused more of an uproar than the like kind of, you know, your Cinderella and I can't remember something, the Little Mermaid as well, which actually you heard did quite well in the end. Definitely, I think you have Gal Gadot, who, depending on your stance, is either like in terms of the acting ability, is not the best. But I haven't seen it for myself.
I think it will do well still.
Yeah, I think the thing about the Disney live action remakes is they are kind of, if you are fans of the original stories, they do kind of service them and kind of build upon them in quite good ways. Mm. So I think definitely if you are a fan of Snow White, I don't think it would harm you to check it out, see what's going on, probably some new stuff, some classic stuff.
I remember I kind of heard all this kind of chat about the Little Mermaid live action one.
Yeah.
Honestly, I thought that was really good. The only thing I had with that, which I thought was a real miss from them, was because of the age it's aimed at, it was crazy long. So, you know, like, it's a film aimed at small people who can't sit still, and it was like, you know, Deer Hunter.
Yeah.
But other than that, I thought, because I remember there was this kind of chat about that film, like, it's wokery gone mad and all this. But actually, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, but, I think that was an interesting case because, there was obviously, there's always people complaining about woke stuff. And for this one as well. And, you know, a lot of the time it is just overblown and arguably just...
To be honest, it's like, I wouldn't care too much about it.
Exactly.
Like, at the end of the day, it's just a film. And I suppose there's maybe more credence to talk about if we are just talking about the film and then sort of like reboot. Or I don't know. There should be a word which is like remake boot or something like that.
Yeah.
Reimagining.
That's it.
Yeah. Reimagining.
It turns out there is a word. We just didn't know.
Yeah. I knew it was there somewhere. But it's just like... So they build on top of the classic and there probably are some poor creative choices potentially made in production. Or, you know, I think it was also just a lot of stigma anyway, criticism that already came out of previous, like, set photo leaks and things like that as well. As soon as something just, like, pops up as information, it's just crowded upon.
But this does happen sometimes in the world of film and then prove to be... God, now I can't think of the phrase... not correct, like a red herring or whatever it is. So
non-PC.
Going a long way back, do you remember when Daniel Craig got the gig as Bond?
Yeah, I was. Like,
and for about 2 years, the hate and the negative noise around that was just absolutely huge. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it came out and it was like, oh yeah, fair enough, he's an absolutely wacky Bond. I do think this happens sometimes with films before they've been made.
Mm, yeah, I mean... That's just, I think, you can connect that easily to the points that we just made. Like, also, it's just some sort of thing about, it's not our Bond or it's not our thing. And it's like, it never belonged to you.
Yeah.
It's just like, I hate to say this, but, you know, because we want people to come in and like to the cinema and stuff. But, you know, that's up to you. Just, you know, I think it's a perfectly fine movie. The songs, I really enjoy music and things like that. My mum probably wants to go and watch it. See, there's certain ways that probably they could be viewed personally. Obviously, a big screen is always the best option. I will probably go with my mum to go watch it. And I'm a fan of Rachel Zegler. I think she's good in a lot of things. Gal Gadot, you know, she's a fine actress. She's been in a lot of things, so fair enough. I find these things bizarre. Like the fact we're even making a point about Snow White. It's like, it's Snow White.
Yeah, and also, right, the people, I mean, I'm generalising a bit here, but the people broadly making these points are people who are much older and were never going to come to the cinema to see this film. It feels a lot like their annoyance is, this is not going to be like the one I remember. But kids are going to be seeing it for the first time who've never seen it before.
Mm.
They don't care that it's nothing like the one made 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, it's funny because I think a lot of people, when they complain about stuff like that, it's like they're asking for the same thing to be given to them over and over again. Exactly. And that's one thing you can criticize Disney for doing with these live action remakes. But, you know, definitely let them explore and try different things.
Yeah, the old Snow White is still around. You can watch that one if you want.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's funny. We've got the live action Lilo and Stitch coming up as well in June.
That's tricky, isn't it?
Yeah, well, from the trailers, I would definitely say, like, I think one thing Snow White's been criticised for quite heavily is this use of CGI. But the way they've done Stitch again is very faithful to that. But I'm kind of looking more forward to that, because I think Stitch is a character we can see in, like, new different situations, mm-hmm. like, and kind of different hijinks. And I think that film might attempt something like that, kind of, again, reimagine that film and give us some more of that those beloved characters in different ways. That's what I'm hoping for, not just like, here's the film again, but like, it's slightly less visually interesting.
Yeah, it's like The Lion King was really clever, but just exactly the same as the draw. But I mean, but in fairness, really clever, but it's just
such a strange, like, I don't want to harp too much on about it, but like, you've got live action Snow White in 2025, and you've got Lilo and Stitch, which came out around 2000 or 99, and then there's a Moana live action remake coming out, which came out in like 2020. So it's a bit like, it's an odd way of doing things. They probably just picked up their most infamous IPs, which I suppose would be like Snow White to some degree, or they have like a backlog, and it's like, oh, okay, this is a catalog that we're going to keep, and these are like fail safes.
But they're not creative decisions. You're right, exactly. They're not creative decisions.
No.
What they are is, so you know that mad fact where like the most streamed film or TV program last year was the first Moana film. Mm. So around the world, it was made however long ago, the most streamed thing around the world last year was the first Moana film. We all go and see the live-action Moana remake because you kind of have to. It's purely a not cynical, it's a hard-nosed money decision, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the thing
to be
getting upset about in terms of, like, just a bit of a content machine going on. But that's happening in a lot of places.
That is, you know, the industry, isn't it?
And funnily enough, might be happening to Bond because of the Amazon takeover now.
Do you know what? We'll stick a pin in that. I think that is worth a discussion.
Definitely, yeah.
On its own merit. So I think in a future pod we'll talk
for sure,
about
definitely,
because we can talk about best Bonds and about how we feel about that.
For sure, I'll be up for that. Sure,
yeah, that sounds good. Okay, so on a I think more positive note, family films. Let's talk about which are the best ones. There's loads of them. So Roberto, let's hear from you.
Yeah, so I was thinking family films, obviously I think firstly, films that you can watch with your family and are kind of just generally a bit of a heartwarming, positive vibe that kind of entertains you all for a couple hours or more. But obviously, I think we've got there's a lot of animated films that fill that gap. But I think there are also family films in like live action family films as well, family friendly films even. And one of them is an absolute classic. I might even have it on your lists, Matilda.
Good film.
I guess as I've gotten older, obviously, like all of your family getting together and watching a film is kind of more of a rarity. It used to happen loads, but one of the last times I did do like a family movie night was with Matilda, and that film is just so good. I mean, it's one of the few cases of like obviously American director taking British a British IP, I guess you'd call it.
Literature.
British literature, Roald Dahl. And doing their own spin on it, actually it really works. Like the casting, firstly, is just amazing. And Danny DeVito, who directed it as well, just does an absolutely amazing job.
Did he direct that? I didn't know.
He directs, stars, narrates, really kind of makes it his own film, and just has all the magic of that film, and also the magic in it because of what happens in it. It's just done so well and really radiates. It just really is a warm.
It's like a once in a lifetime thing. Honestly. Yeah. Because like there's so many nice stories you hear from, like, I don't know, like Insta reels and stuff. You'd like stories about Danny DeVito would like almost look after Mara Wilson like his own child on set.
Yeah.
As well. And made sure she went to school also while she was like doing breaks and things like that. It's just, I don't know. And that adds to the sort of obviously him being the vicious dad that he is in the film anyway. It's just so nice. I watched that film. Also, semi-nostalgia, but it's such a warm movie to look at as well.
And I know what you mean with that. When you've got real firm favourites, it's kind of nice when you start to learn a bit about the subculture around the film. It's nice to hear that people enjoyed it and that they're fond of it.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think that really comes through in that film, like the positivity on the set and how much everyone actually enjoyed working with each other kind of really radiates through the screen. Yeah, I just think it's absolutely, it's just a classic. It's kind of, it's like one of those films that was probably liked back then, but now that all the people who watched it have grown up, like my older sister used to watch it like all the time. And it's just for her, it's like one of her favorite films. And funny enough, back when she was younger, she really used to look like Mara Wilson in that film. And I used to go like, oh, it's really weird. It's like my sister's on the screen.
So, Matilda, very good.
That is a classic.
Very good start. What else you got for us?
Yeah, so I was thinking about, then obviously I do have a few animated films. I was kind of thinking, what ones have kind of been not as, like, not brought up in conversation often? And one of them I rewatched this Boxing Day, I believe, Ice Age. film, the first Ice Age is...
Good film.
I think people forget how... actually quite good it is, because the sequels were all of varying quality, honestly, to say the least. I think you forget how like good that dynamic is between the three of them. The cast, the voice casting of those
who
three.
Remind me who the voices are.
Ray Romano.
He's got a great voice.
John Leguizamo and as Sloth.
Yeah, and Dennis Leary as... Leary.
That's right.
The Tiger.
Yes.
Diego. The first is great.
And that's, it really is. And just some quite actually, I remember watching when I was younger, some quite serious moments that you really grow up, you go, oh, that's what that is. That's really surprising for a film like that to have that in. And then also have a squirrel like cause global warming. The scrat scenes are always like a really good interlude. It's just a funny thing. Like you wouldn't do that in a film nowadays. You wouldn't be like, right, we're going to have this squirrel just kind of like, mess around in between the main characters.
Yeah. I would still watch like a series of short animated cartoons of Scrat.
Yeah, like, definitely.
Currently, if you've got his nut.
Yeah, did you see? Because they closed the studio down, but they did a little animation where he finally got it.
Yeah,
it was actually quite nice.
Thank goodness, then.
Yeah, no. If you haven't watched Ice Age in a while, and you're kind of like, don't know how I felt about that, give Ice Age another go. It really is.
The third or fourth one is always on instead. Dawn of the Dinosaurs.
I guess
one of those ones.
And they do. I guess is it Disney?
It's Blue Sky who don't make films anymore. They kind of merged into another company. Because
you do have to be careful, don't you? Like, because I know what you mean, that this is a mad way to talk about such a lovely kids' film, but the Ice Age brand is a bit tainted, because like it's like when a band has a great album, and then in the next three are just terrible.
They're like Nickelback.
Movies. Exactly. Like the other Ice Ages, I think, have made people misremember, as you say, the first Ice Age, because it's actually decent.
It's got some, that ending is so... just, it's so lovely. It really is.
It is heartwarming.
Love Ice Age.
Yeah,
that's a
good one. Ice Age, good one.
And then I've got two for here, because I've got one that is kind of a more recent, I think, definitely going to be a family favourite for eons, years to come. And then one that I think is kind of in a similar stead, but kind of because it got dumped on Netflix last year, people didn't really see it. But the main one is Into the Spider-Verse, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which I think rewatching it, because I watched it in the cinema twice, and I was kind of like, oh, this is such an awesome new film. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing the trailer and going to people in my sick form, like, look at the animation, guys. And they were like, yeah, it's another Spider-Man film, though. I don't really care. And obviously it came out and people were like, this is actually incredible. Yeah. But rewatching it, and I think I was like, it was on TV one time. And I just did that thing where you just sit down and watch the rest of it from where it is. Because it really hits all the beats that I think I don't know what it was about, like, the late 90s, early 2000s, but there was a certain, they hit certain beats in their stories.
So I've never seen Into Spider-Verse. What sort of age are we looking at? I guess I'm thinking, like, you know, because Freddie loves a bit of Spider-Man. Like, what, how family is it?
I think there are, it, again, it hits serious beats.
So I think it's a PG anyway.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay.
So you could be sat with him and you could probably watch it together. It does definitely hit story beats that are quite emotional, but in a way where it, like, insists upon itself. Do you know what I mean? Like, it just, it really, like, backs itself up and just goes absolutely incredible, like, with the animation itself, and just the story is so, like, touching, because, you know, it's sort of a new origin of a new Spider-Man. So you do get the sort of Uncle Ben-ness of it, but with, you know, with a lot more of a diverse and original sort of output. Mm. And
I might give that a go, because I've heard it's amazing, but
the second one is like,
yeah, the second one's definitely more, the second one, I would say, definitely, yeah. But that first one, and like you said about the kind of how, like, diverse it is, it's a really good film in terms of, and especially I think to watch as a family and to show to younger people, because it's kind of about what we were talking about in terms of why we need new characters and new stories. Right. And using Spider-Man as a vehicle for that is such a great, it just really works. And Miles Morales now is kind of as...
I never felt more like revitalized with Spider-Man after watching that movie. I really want to read a comic of Spider-Man.
Yeah, right? Definitely.
So do you know what? I'm going to make a note that there's a guy I know sitting at home at the moment in an actual Spider-Man outfit who I think... might be ready for that one. Okay, good. Nice. Yeah, Into the Spider-Verse. Nice.
And I'll quickly throw this one in, because it's also a superhero film, an animated superhero film, but it got it got dumped on Netflix last year. And the only reason I was aware of it is because I managed to catch a trailer and I was sort of getting into what it was at the time, where I'd watched another film, because it's called Ultraman Rising. I don't know if you've seen, that pop poster up on your feed?
Yeah.
So it's based on this kind of a Power Rangers-esque, well, it's one of the progenitors of Power Rangers back in the day, this 60s, like, big guy in a suit fights monsters show. Mm. And it had a new film recently, which I watched. But other than that, I don't really know anything about it. So I kind of caught the trailer and I was like, oh, you know what? I'll give that a watch. I'm already into it. I think it kind of got a bit thrown under the bus, because it's way better than you'd expect a Netflix, straight to Netflix.
And I've never heard of it. And that's a miss. Do you know what I mean? Like, I should have heard of it at least.
Yeah, if you're browsing the kids section, you see it pop up, I do recommend it, because it's essentially about this character who is established as this character, as this superhero Ultraman. He fights off big monsters and he's a bit reluctant to do it. But then he comes across a baby kaiju, as they call it, a baby big monster. And kind of keeping the parenting theme going up, it kind of just becomes a film about him having to be a dad to this baby kaiju. And it actually, it really zeroes in on it. And it really kind of touches on all the beats of parenting and the challenges and the struggles, and then his relationship with his parents and how it affects it. Actually, very, you know, in between, like,
sort big, of tempted, I'm
bigger. Thought. Yeah, I think it was, I was expecting it to be like, you know, it might be skewer way too young, or like not kind of, I don't know, just be a bit disposable, like it's clearly Netflix thought it was to just dump it, but it kind of actually really kind of hit some beats.
And what's it called again?
Ultraman Rising.
All right, Ultraman Rising.
Yeah, it's definitely worth watching with the fam.
New recommendations for Easter holiday.
I was going to say, and good stuff, Roberto. I love this. Like, I've gone very. I mean, mine are ones that everybody knows. I love the fact you've brought some slightly left field stuff there.
Yeah, well, let's hear them. Nice. I'm interested, because, you know, for some people there are classics, and then they're the ones they really cherish, and it's different between everyone, I think.
So I'm going to watch those and I'll give you feedback next month. Good list. Right, Nick, how about you?
Right, I've got a few, so I will quickly go through them, but I do like watching a family film, because it's nice to get people over, and I enjoy watching movies with more people, you know? So could be a family, it's perfect. First one I've got is Coco. Coco is like a brand new classic to me. I would easily watch this film at least once a year. You know, it's about this family in Mexico that have a sort of curse against music. Mexico's right?
Yeah.
Sorry. But yes, they have the sort of curse against music, and I'm guessing a lot of you must have seen it.
Yeah.
Roberto, you've seen it.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah. I just have a great time with it all the time. And I swear every time the Nana Coco scene gets to me.
Yeah,
every time. Like, I even watch reactions on it of YouTube, and I'm like, oh my goodness, why am I doing this to myself?
Is it's that just a Disney one?
Pixar. But just like, seemed like sort of outfield, like you wouldn't really anticipate in such a movie, and just to be like such a great telling of like this family and story of family within itself, and finding like a lost love, and also the aspect of like going into this like new world of like the afterlife sort of thing, and the gothic sort of nature of that. I just think it's a brilliant film. I'm sure a lot of people think they enjoy
that. Don't you think, like, you know, we were talking earlier about the Snow White thing and the kind of the allegations of like going too woke, stuff like this. One thing that when they get it right, the one thing that Disney and Pixar do really well, they really do show kids completely different cultures in a really intelligent and respectful way. So like Moana does it, Coco does it, Encanto does it. You know, like they are really good at showing different ways of being and living in different cultures.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Recently as well, I think, is kind of like a lot of the best like Pixar and Disney films or like the ones that are kind of now modern beloved hits are the ones that are very much kind of widening perspectives, especially for younger viewers. Definitely there's a trend there, I think. Especially like Luca as well.
I was going to mention Soul. Luca, yeah. Luca's not like amazingly like out there film. It's actually quite a simple tale of like just friendship and in like southern Italy and stuff like that, but it just has, you know, these little fantasy elements, and they've just managed to tell. Pixar also just really like refined that formula to make those films anyway, isn't it, like just throughout their sequels and all their, I mean, I've got more coming up really.
Yeah, go on.
Well, on to the next Pixar, may as well, is Ratatouille.
Oh, yes.
Ratatouille is just like an amazing movie. It makes you love life, like, honestly. It just makes you just appreciate the life you have around you, especially in that scene with the food critic at the end. It's just like the unlocking of like childhood and being that, wanting to be that person that you were, that you may not be at the same time or like currently. But also just like the attachment to food. Love food. My family love food. We're all from Italian backgrounds, and so pasta's always a thing that makes me go back to my memories of childhood, and especially like pasta bizzelli, which is like pasta with peas, and my great aunt used to make that, and you know, I was like a 3-year-old. It's just like I feel the attachment there very much. Nice. And I think that's a great film to watch with everyone around you,
and
really.
Fair play, I feel like that's a Disney staple. There's a lot of their films where people are walloping big bowls of pasta. That's like something that happens a lot in Disney.
It does happen a lot. I think Lady and the Tramp as well, you know. Yeah, that was a starting point, wasn't it?
Watching animated films with food in is so dangerous because it just makes you want to like get in your kitchen and just like put things in.
You'll definitely want to eat something with this next family movie, which is Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen it.
That's so great. It's based on like a storybook, picture book. So the inventor, Flink Lockwood, lives in, is it Swallow Falls, which produces canned angeries.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a while.
It's just known to, he lives in a town where it's like, it's just known for canned anchovies, and that's all it will ever be until Flint Lockwood creates a machine that creates food from water. And then there's a hijinks, something happens where then the weather report says that hamburgers are falling from the sky and then fixes the economy or things like that. And it's just really, it's so fun. Like, it's a really great movie. It's so out, like, just slapstick aplenty. Like, if you know, like, Andy Samberg and, like, those Lonely Island and Chris Miller.
Yeah, so, well, it's Phil Lord and Chris Miller who, Phil Lord did and they Chris direct Miller. It or did they just write it or produce it?
Didn't they direct it too as well?
Yeah. Because obviously they're kind of the spearheads of Spider-Verse.
So they were involved in the Spider-Verse, and involved in one of your favourite Lego products.
Yeah.
So it's a great movie. If you've never seen it, go and check it out.
And
the sequel's great as well, but the original is always the best one for me. Next one, I had Matilda on my list, so that's a quick just fly through, you know. Real recognized real there.
Yeah.
Another two slightly older classics that I will continue to watch throughout is Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Love it. Yeah.
First off,
Mad. I've never seen the original.
I love it.
Yeah.
What?
I've seen so many clips and particularly people saying, like,
it's balmy.
Yeah.
It's good. It's balmy.
It's a great movie.
It's classic kind of Roald Dahl from the, like, source material stuff, because it's like
so wacky,
And it's sort of edgy and quite dark. You know, he doesn't.
Gene Wilder brings that though,
yeah,
he brings that with the performance of Wonka.
And why I think kids love Roald Dahl books, why they've stayed around so much, is he doesn't spare them stuff. Like, kids are getting bad stuff is happening to kids, and also terrifying people are appearing. Yeah, great choice.
All the child abuse that goes on in the Chocolate Factory. I mean, come on. So I've got Surf's Up is another great family movie which I enjoy quite a lot. Have you seen that?
I haven't seen this.
Is this
since
the one with the penguins?
Penguin surfer.
Yes,
yeah, yeah.
It's like one of those films I watched as a kid, and then when I grew up and kind of like got in more into like film criticism, I was like, oh, I bet that film. I bet people hate that film. And I looked the other day on like Letterboxd. It has like a 3.7. I was like, it's got like a really good score.
It's a great movie. Because it's sort of told through like a mockumentary lens.
I remember that.
You meet this surfer who's voiced by Shia LaBeouf. And then there's so like, he's like, oh yeah, no, you know, I live in Antarctica, but I really want to become a surfer. And it's just like told in this like reality TV mockumentary style. And he just meets all these other surfer dudes, like the Chicken, played by John Heder, who played Napoleon Dynamite.
Oh yeah,
and he's just like, he's playing it so like typical Shaggy-esque from Scooby-Doo, you know, like, hey dude. But, and it's just a really funny movie. Like, I didn't expect it when I first watched it, but I will go back to it again. Picking up what you said about Spider-Verse, is like, if I see it's on, I will turn on and just watch the rest of it.
I'm definitely going to revisit that.
I feel like I've seen it, but...
It's a laugh.
No,
it is a laugh. You just got to let go. And, you know, if you were the kids and stuff, you think they might find it funny.
But quickly talk about Shia LaBeouf? Where... He was in
Megalopolis.
He's in that thing, is he?
He was in that. He did... Well, he got into some trouble. I think he did some pretty bad things.
A bit more of a free agent now.
From my understanding.
Did a few art projects.
Touch of the Kanye West about him. He says and does some.
Potentially.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think he said anything too wild in public eye.
Right.
Yeah.
But you know.
But he's been accused of things. But
true.
Francis Ford Coppola gave him a shot. I don't know if anyone else will be, but.
I know one will give Francis Ford Coppola a shot.
After Megalopolis, many people's careers will be suffering.
Honestly.
That may be a conversation for another day.
That is not for me, that film. On the happier.
And to family films again. Sorry, I've got a couple more just because I love them. The Iron Giant.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Another great movie. Classic. If, you know, just sit down and watch it with your children. I had this on VHS when I was younger. I probably didn't know what was going on half the time, but the relationship still between the Iron Giant and the little boy, Hugo, I think, just like sticks out.
It was a little book when I was a kid, but weirdly it was called, well, not weirdly, it was called The Iron Man.
Mm.
That doesn't matter. But it was The Iron Giant, I guess.
Yeah. No, well, I don't know much about the backstory between that. If it was a book, that's news to me, now, to be honest.
I'm sure it was.
I've always just known it. It's just knowing I'm moving.
I better Google that now. That was just something, you know, when you say something, you really lose your nerve.
And then I've got a couple more. So Hugo, another one, great family movie, directed by Martin Scorsese, starring Asa Butterfield. And that leads into like the love of film as well, because he meets Ben Kingsley's character, who is George Melies, who then did the... Rocket on the Moon.
Yeah,
you know, that really famous like rocket ship in the eye, in the eye of the moon. It's just a really nice like tale of like movies and sort of past lives and things like that. And then I actually got some movies that I enjoy that can be watched by a family together, but are about families, not specifically.
Nice. Yeah, love it.
So first one I've got is Minari. And Minari is like this Korean family that moved to want to make a new life in America, and they sort of like get a farm. They start to begin to like grow their own crops to sell in the local communities and stuff. So it's just about this family and how they sort of get into this new life in America. They, you know, they sort of begin to get a bit more of a reputation and things. And it's just a beautiful, like, really told, like, simple story.
What's it called? Minari?
Well.
I've never heard
Minari.
Of it.
Minari.
Nice.
Came out in 2020, starring Steven Yeun as well.
Yeah.
Just a beautiful film, and the score is amazing. I listen to the score almost like a couple of months every time. Like, it's a lovely movie. Yeah.
Oh, good stuff. I've never heard of that.
And then
excellent.
Last movie, sorry, Saving Mr. Banks, I think is a great movie.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
Like, it's just the way that Emma Thompson is in that movie that also that makes me cry is like when she's sitting there and watching Mary Poppins and reminiscing about her own family is like a really touching moment. It's just and Mary Poppins also to link with that, you know, you've got to watch Mary Poppins.
It's a clever angle that Saving Mr. Banks, isn't it?
Yeah. Great performances, even with what's that dude, Jason Schwartzman. He's like such a great actor.
I really like Jason Schwartzman. He's like
he's been in a lot of Wes Anderson movies. And,
I think I'd have to Google him, Jason Schwartzman.
Scott Pilgrim as well. It's Gideon Graves.
Yeah.
He's great. That guy. Yeah, okay.
He sort of like, he played the nerd a lot, and now he's becoming a bit more into like
higher ground
of being like top billing almost a lot.
Yeah, and he's popping up more consistently, which is really nice to see as well. He's like one of those actors when you feel like you're in good hands when they're on screen.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a really good shout. That saved Mr. Banks.
Yeah.
Good like lists, lads. Good lists. And I like the fact there's ones that I and definitely some of the listeners have never heard of before, which is always good. That's what the policy brings you.
Exactly.
Nice. I think mine, I haven't really done a list, but mine are, I'm just going to, just a big shout out to the mainstream, the ones that people know, because I think it's worth doing. I think the Lego films are pretty much all incredible.
They are, yeah.
Disney and Pixar rightly get credit because it's like, oh, the parents can enjoy it and the kids can enjoy it. The Lego films are that to the ultimate degree.
Mm.
Like, kids absolutely love them and they are properly as funny as any comedy films that have come out in recent years. Like Lego
definitely.
Batman, to state the obvious, is just brilliant. The Lego Ninja movie. Like, if you watch these films, you laugh so much.
I want to watch the Ninja one.
They're so funny. Yeah. The Ninja one is, and the Ninja one's kind of up there with Lego Batman. Like, they're properly funny, and the kids love them. And I think in terms of, so I think shout out to the Lego films.
I'd quite like to see more still.
They
never really stopped.
They were a roll, and then I guess we had the Pharrell biopic, but
that's true.
The same
that was a good
thing.
Lego movie.
They've also started doing something which I'm sure they know best, but they kind of pop the odd one out that's about an hour. So there's like a Lego Flash film that's kind of okay.
Right,
that's true.
Like, so they're not doing the big ones at the moment, but there's a lot of
little ones,
Lego-y content, but not as good as the main ones.
Yeah.
I think shout out to Lego films, they're amazing. We don't need to mention how good the likes of Frozen, MR, Cars, of course, all amazing. I wanted to give a quick shout out to The Sound of Music.
Mm. Oh, yes. I didn't even really... I mean, I've never seen The Sound of Music all the way through. I've only seen...
I hadn't. So it's my wife, Jem's, favourite ever film.
Oh, brilliant.
I'd never seen it. I wouldn't say she maybe watched it, but she introduced me to it. We even went to Salzburg on The Sound of Music. Like,
oh, awesome.
Yeah, nice. And that was a treat. And it was tough going for me. Cause don't get me wrong, I enjoyed the film, but it was me who kind of has seen the film once and quite enjoyed it with about 50 people on a bus who just love The Sound of Music and just singing the songs and all this. Also, quick aside, what's really funny about Salzburg, so Salzburg's in Austria, it's where The Sound of Music's made.
Yeah.
There's a bar that we went to that has shown The Sound of Music every evening at 8 p.m. for the past, let's say, 30 years.
However long that film's been.
Yeah, so we went to see that with a pizza, which was nice. But also, it's really funny because in Salzburg, they don't really care about the film, but they know it's a massive money spinner. So there's loads of Sound of Music stuff for you to see and buy, but actually they kind of don't, none of them have actually sat down and watched it. They just know that you come because you love it kind of thing. But so shout out to Sound of Music, great family film, absolute classic.
I only just watched that like a month ago. I did really enjoy it.
Good film,
I've never
right?
seen it before, and I know the songs and everything, but it's actually a, like, yeah, again, when I was like, oh, this is more touching than I thought.
I would say the kids are slightly annoying, you know, like the kind of theatre kids. There's a bit where all the kind of grown-ups are at a party. This is before the Nazis arrive.
Is it Richard?
Spoiler alert.
Who's the guy? Oh, the Christopher Plummer.
Yeah, Christopher Plummer. Right. Yeah, he's so good. Who hates the film, apparently.
Oh, don't tell me that.
No,
he's
but
the best bit. I thought he was great.
Quite a sort of good-natured way. Like, yeah. You know, gets asked about it a lot.
He's like, come on.
But yeah, there's a bit where loads of adults go to a party and they all have to stop what they're doing while the Von Trapp kids come down and do like a song each. And I always thought, God, if I was at that party, I'd be a bit annoyed. But yeah, very, very good film. And I guess it plays into something that makes a lot of the family film so good is the musical score. So, you know, things like Moana with Lin-Manuel Miranda, like Sound of Music lives, you know, lives on because of the music in it. And I think a lot of the films we've even mentioned here.
Oh, yeah.
The music is so integral now to a lot of these films, you know.
Yeah, that's another thing. Sorry, going from Sound of Music back to Ice Age is such a crazy segue. But I remember when I watched Ice Age, I was like, the soundtrack is really good. And it's got the Rusted Root song as well in it.
Yeah, that's in Matilda as well.
Yeah, it is. I guess Synergy, I really like that song. I think as well, like, another thing about
the family, Ice Age, though.
Yeah, I think as well about all the family films we mentioned is, like, we said, oh, there are, like, touching moments, bits that make you cry. But I think that is very important for a film for the family to kind of watch, because, you know, the good thing about watching stuff like that, obviously, it's good storytelling as well.
Yeah.
But it kind of brings you all together when you kind of go through a bit of a touchy moment in a film like that. Kind of, you come out the other side, kind of feeling more connected.
So an instant dance party.
So nice one, lads. Some very, very good shouts there for family films. And if you're listening, get yourself along to see some of those. That have been mentioned. A lot of them are new to me. And get yourself along to see Snow White. Don't be so grumpy about that. Now, coming up, we'll have part three. We'll find out what's going on with the Odyssey, and we will try our new film cliche segment and see how we go. Apologies in advance. Hello and welcome back to part three of this latest edition of the Podyssey. So, new feature, chaps, as promised, film cliches. Every episode, well, until people get bored of it, we're going to bring a new film cliche to discuss. I've got one because I noticed a few of these happening around the streaming services, and I'll be interested in your take on it. And at the end of this discussion, we'll decide whether we're trying to kill the cliche off, like Sean Bean, or keep it going strong, like Jason Statham. Is everyone clear to the rules?
Yes. Okay. Great.
Right. So the cliche I want to bring up is this. Old/middle-aged guy having a quiet life somewhere, usually as a farmer, lovely to all his neighbours, perfect, you know, quiets himself, and then some real wrong-uns do a thing. They take a person, they punch a thing, they rob somewhere, and they have to spring into action. I think there are probably bordering on 100 of these films now. So there's things like Gran Torino, there's Taken 1, 2, 3, maybe even 4, John Wick 1, 2, 3, 4. Most Jason Statham films, including The Beekeeper and the one that's coming out in the next few weeks. The Equalizer 1, 2, 3, the Denzel Washington ones. The History of Violence one with Viggo Mortensen. And even back in the day, like the Die Hard film, John McClane, normal guy trying to do his thing.
Definitely.
And I would say even the Logan film is kind of the same. Wolverine's trying to live a quiet life. Yeah. So there's a lot of these films.
So what's your point?
I'd be interested in, do you think we've had enough of these, or do you think this is a film cliche that we should continue to allow to go strong like Jason Statham?
This is an interesting one for me because I love action films and particularly like martial arts and stuff, and I really like John Wick and you know, kind of various action films that probably fall into that category, and I actually did end up watching The Beekeeper recently, which was a a similar thing.
And enjoyed it. Ridiculous film.
Yeah.
But I did enjoy it.
So, I mean, let's get onto that in a minute. But also, funny enough, yeah, so we have A Working Man coming up on Friday the 9th of May at 7:30, which
Give us the premise of A Working Man, please.
It's basically what you just described. It's actually the same director as The Beekeeper. He's a construction worker, blue collar,
going about his business, keeping himself to himself.
Working on his construction site, but when his boss's daughter, because I guess it can't be his daughter, because like he's got to be
special forces, maybe.
He turns out he's ex special forces.
There are a lot of them.
He's going after these guys who have kidnapped this daughter. And why I'm quite excited for this one is a lot of the promo has him holding a sledgehammer, which I think means we may be getting Jason Statham beating dudes with a sledgehammer.
And in a hard hat, which, I hope as well.
Yeah, yes. Well, that's the thing, isn't it? I think the thing about that cliche is like you can play it super like as normal, and yeah. I think definitely you can get pretty bored with that. Like it depends if the action isn't kind of doing the heavy lifting, or if the leading character just isn't offering any interesting characteristics. I think that's the thing with John Wick. I think John Wick is interesting because he does everything he does because a dog is killed at the start of the film. And that's very different, whereas not to be... And I love Jason Statham.
Same, like, I enjoy his films, yeah. Guilty pleasure.
I think he's a good pair of hands as well to be in. Like, you see Jason Statham, you're like, we're okay, we're in good hands.
Yeah.
But he definitely plays the same guy in all of those films, and it's always... And sometimes it's with a dodgy American accent, which I think... But I think with Jason Statham, that's a bit of charm there. Like, the kind of... The nonsensicality of it all... In The Beekeeper, it started with a woman being scammed online, and then it somehow ended with him in the White House attacking the Secret Service.
Yes. And so, again, this is weird because I'm kind of complaining about this, but I really enjoy pretty much all of Statham's output, including The Beekeeper. There's a bit in The Beekeeper where he's joined by a girl whose mum or nan has been killed.
Yes, yeah.
She is way not bothered enough.
Yeah.
Do you know, she's more interested in what Statham's up to than the fact that mum or nan has been killed.
It really pivots from that inciting incident to Jason Statham is tearing through America right now. We need to stop him.
And she's just kind of wisecracking on the side. It's like, do you miss your mum?
Yeah. Can I ask, because I never saw the film, and I'm not...
What?
Matthew's being spoiled. What is the beekeeper? Is he just a beekeeper?
He's like an ex. It's kind of like a John Wick situation.
Yes.
It's like an ex-assassin.
And so it's a code name.
Well, this is what they've done. This is why it's clever. Yeah. He is a beekeeper. He keeps bees.
Okay.
He's also was a beekeeper, which is a top secret. The CIA don't even know about them. Set of assassins.
Oh, really?
From the Hive, what's called the Hive. Of course it is.
Okay.
And I think, again, this is a bit of a film cliche in itself. When he goes on the rampage, it sets off an alarm somewhere. We're kind of old billionaire guys. Like,
yeah, that is.
Someone's gone rogue, so the other people who did his job have to get after him.
The pager went off.
Yeah.
it really is interesting because it's kind of just a good setup for a story to have, like, the reluctant hero thrown back into the action man antics.
Yeah.
But I think the good thing about it as well, directors can kind of work off it and kind of spin it in their own way, especially visually. Like, I think the thing about John Wick, if people aren't talking about how good the action is, it's the world building and like how awesome all of like the kind of details are with the coins and the kind of people who come in to clear up the mess afterwards, and the hotel as well is a really big thing. But then when you don't have anything like that, and I mean I've never watched any of the Taken movies, but my understanding is that Liam Neeson is just like going around bashing people.
Yeah, funny enough, the problem with the Taken films... So I think, first of all, like, you know, you never want to be first to something.
Yeah.
They now don't seem as good as all the other ones. But also, the problem with Taken films is, first of all, there's three of them.
There's too many.
But also, like, nobody gives Liam Neeson a problem from start to finish.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There is no... Apparently, there is no crime henchman or ninja or... other special force type person who can bother Liam Neeson, which means after about an hour, there's no jeopardy. It's like, I'm just waiting for him to see everybody off and win this.
It's like waiting in real time.
I guess my stance on it would be, I like it in a kind of ironic way. I'm like, oh, one of these again, let's go, you know, if I'm in the right mood for it. But I think in terms of getting back to like quality storytelling out of it, I think for me, it would be kind of, and I think in action cinema in general, at the moment is very kind of not cold, because it's like, you know, we're kind of getting more like brutal stuff coming out. But like, I definitely think action cinema is missing like a touch of the emotion, a touch of the empathy, maybe. Like you're talking about in The Beekeeper. Like,
right.
You know, her mum dies and she's just pretty. She's like, oh, that was upsetting. Anyway, let's go on this.
Most of the time, though, that's sort of used tongue-in-cheek, isn't it? Because I just initially thought about, even I know it's not elderly gentleman, but like Man on the Rampage, like Boy Kills World. Like that movie, which was just like, oh, it's like a revenge mission. And most of them end up being revenge missions.
They kind of are, yeah.
Like vengeance missions. But specifically the older gent genre, I don't have too much of an opinion. I've seen a couple of Takens and I've seen the film Nobody with Bob Odenkirk.
That's a good one.
That's a pretty good one.
On Netflix, right? I think maybe.
Yeah. And that one does what you say, like plays into the trope a little bit, because exactly. There's a part where he's like talking to someone about like what he used to do, and they just like end up like dying before he can finish, and he's like, oh well, didn't need to do that.
Yeah. Oh man, I would say though, I'd still say Stay Strong with Statham.
I think so. I think if directors kind of continue to spin it in interesting ways, and like kind of maybe take a pause from the bashing to kind of reflect on the characters a bit more, just kind of have a more interesting, more like maybe more of a character study at the center of it, I think I'm definitely Stay Strong with Safe with that. Because also, when it's fun as well, it's fun.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree. And I enjoy him. So we're not going to kill it off like Sean Bean's going to Stay Strong like Statham. And I guess there's an appetite for them, right? And I guess you don't have to have a psychology master's to be like, I guess the point is they're kind of us a bit, but doing what we can't do on our behalf. Yeah, okay. Stay Strong Like Statham. That was the first and possibly last, depending on how it goes, film cliches section. Now, chaps, we've got about 5 minutes left, so let's quickly have a look ahead. What's coming up at the Odyssey in the next couple of weeks that we're excited about? Nicholas, you have a go.
Well, I think actually something to be worth talking about is A Working Man, to be honest. Like, now that I'm thinking about it, you know, we have got another Jason Statham star, right?
I'll be there.
Sort of thing, exactly.
I'm sure we'll go watch it.
Make it a group trip. Oh, we should definitely do like a policy thing there.
Yes, okay, done.
And I'm also looking quite forward to the Minecraft movie, and it's I have no idea what Minecraft. Well, I know it's obviously like a worldwide, like huge game, but there's something about the media trends and the things and the marketing trail that has definitely just sort of been like, I'll watch it. Like, it definitely there's some
it's got in there
elements there. I like Jack Black, you know, most of
the
time.
I like Jack Black. Yeah.
I like most of the other cast. Jason Momoa is okay and things like that, but we've got that in, I believe the first showing is the 3rd of May, which is already booking now. And then we've got quite a few more during May as well. I do want to, of course, like one of my favourite movies of all time, probably number one, Cinema Paradiso is coming back to the Odyssey. It's also the Odyssey's favourite movie. So there's always a reason to show that. We've got that on Sunday the 11th of May at 12:30.
About Projectionist, so like a busman's holiday for you too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've got to do my research now.
It's like as I get older, I can see more relation to Salvatore. And I also just want to quickly mention, because we're bringing it back as well, Six the Musical. It was a great time.
Oh, yeah.
Been really popular, selling pretty well. I haven't seen it yet.
No,
I've just
haven't.
Been wanting to watch it. Literally, I've sat in the projection room, turned it on, and then just walked away because I'm not trying to watch anything before actually.
So you want to actually enjoy it and
get in there with it. And it looks like a bunch of fun. It's a quick one as well, no interval, so it's really an in and out sort of job with that one.
Nice.
Sorry, just one more. Actually, I do have. I've just seen it now. It's Sinners.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah.
Are you gonna, Ryan Coogler, do you want to talk about Sinners, maybe?
I mean, I don't know much because I've been kind of avoiding it on purpose because I don't want to get spoiled by trailers or anything. But I really like Ryan Coogler's work outside of Black Panther. Not that I'm like really against the Black Panther films, but just in terms of I really like Creed.
Yeah.
I like Creed.
Seen Fruitvale Station?
I haven't seen that, but I wanna watch that.
That's a great movie. So what's Sinners then? Tell me about Sinners.
So since or what you know might about not it. Too much about it. So without spoiling too much, it's a thriller set in the Deep South. I think it's like 40s, 50s era Deep South. And it's sort of about these two lads, so they're both played by Michael B. Jordan, but sort of like, I think in the same way, maybe almost like a twin-esque revenge thing that's going on. But the marketing's been a bit twisty because I was led to believe that it's a gangster movie, but which I think it is, but there is some horror twists.
They're trying to not give something away, do you think?
Yeah, well, potentially. The latest trailer I saw had some vampire teeth in it. So there might be some, more to it than what the trailer is actually giving away.
And he's great, Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah.
So charismatic and watchable.
He is so good. Creed as well, like he's so good at that role.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, sure.
The bulk of it.
I've
done too much talking.
Sinners, but yeah, that's one to look out for. Yeah. I'm going
to
see that.
To be fair, I've only got a couple myself, actually. One I've actually already seen. I actually didn't think I was going to see it anywhere else but The Odyssey, but I actually ended up, I was in Nottingham and ended up being able to catch it with my partner. Flow, which we're playing Tuesday the 15th of April at 7 o'clock, and then we do have another screening Saturday the 10th of May at 1 o'clock. So if you don't know about this, it won Best Animated Feature at the Oscars this year. Kind of out of surprise. I didn't expect it to win. I was just like, oh, the kind of more artsy film, that will get a mention, but, you know, it won't win. And then it won, and I was like, whoa. So it's about a cat kind of living in a world seemingly only populated by animals at this point in the film's timeline. And then a great kind of flood happens, and this cat, who's very solitary and kind of keeps to itself, kind of ends up on this adventure with a whole bunch of other animals, and they kind of so it has no the great thing about it has no dialogue, but these animals all firstly behave so accurately to how they behave in real life, but also have such pronounced character arcs. It's like there's a lemur whose character development is like second to none in this film. And firstly, if you love cute animals, you owe it to yourself to come watch it. But I cried three times in it because what it kind of is about and kind of how what it's talking about with nature and kind of the environment as well, I suppose. It really is very evocative, and just through visual storytelling just really kind of makes a really great point about kind of, you know, unity and adapting and kind of using these animals as vehicles to tell a greater story.
That's also quite brave, a film with no dialogue.
Yeah, and I recommend bringing, because it is a U, and, you know, I wouldn't say it's anything necessarily too distressing in there. It touches on some kind of sad themes and emotional moments, but I think it is a film that will firstly engage a young mind, because it does clip along quite well. But it also is, I'd say, possibly even quite important to watch just in terms of what it's about as well. And, you know, you can't go wrong with cats and dogs having a little adventure, to be honest. I really loved it. I really recommend that film. And then my second one, on a completely different note, is The French Connection, which we're playing Thursday the 17th of April at 7:30. Another classic film, playing in honour of Gene Hackman, obviously, who passed away recently. In probably one of his best roles. Not a very nice character, but also speaking to Gene Hackman as a person, he was like very uncomfortable with playing the character, which is nice to hear, because, you know,
it'd
be a bit worrying if he was like, oh yeah, this is me. But obviously features one of the greatest car chases of all time, is directed by William Friedkin, is kind of a very kind of almost mockumentary style cop criminal thriller about the blurred line between them, and is just a riveting time. I really recommend coming to see it if you haven't.
Good stuff coming up. And funny enough, on that, I just recently watched The Conversation, because obviously Gene Hackman put it in mind.
Yeah.
Seen that film?
That's, brilliant film.
Yeah.
I've been told to watch it.
Really good film. Really odd film.
Yeah, tense, right? And just makes you paranoid.
Oh my God, yeah, no, very good. So yeah, R.I.P. Gene Hackman. All right, lads, great stuff. Good episode. Thank you so much. I think the time's come for us to say goodbye. It got a name check earlier. I think we should probably try and say goodbye in the style of Lego Batman.
Yeah, let's do it.
I sort of want Nick to go first because he doesn't look very happy with his choice, which makes me really keen.
How to do it.
I think, what, Roberto, you go first while Nick has
okay.
a think.
Okay, like, because Lego Batman's pre. Yeah, okay, so. Oh, I forgot his voice. Okay, no, it's Will Arnett.
Will Arnett.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Podyssey.
Not
Check
bad.
Us out later.
Not bad. Yeah, very
Short
good.
Short and sweet.
Thank you for listening to the Podyssey. See you soon.
That's pretty good.
Very good. Yeah, this is the Podyssey. Yeah, that's right, losers. We made it. Yeah, it's great. Yeah. Listener, don't listen. If you don't listen, you're a loser. Yeah, Batman. Yeah. Right. Thank great. You, everybody.
Watch that film a lot
new. Oh, I've seen it so many times. I love it. Right. Thank you, lads. Really enjoyed that. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We're really pleased you listen. If you can, subscribe and download the episodes. I won't bore you with why. It makes a difference to us. But thank you so much for listening. We're delighted that you do. And we'll see you again in a month's time. Thanks, lads.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. If you want to drop us a line here at the Podyssey, you can email me at neil.rodger@mix926.com with your thoughts on the show, your views on the films we've talked about, and if you're feeling brave, you could do our next intro or set our next final challenge. You can find out all about what's on at the Odyssey or what's going on with Mix 92.6 FM by checking out the websites and searching them on all the socials where they can both be found.